I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give. MSW Media.
Liz Winstead. Welcome to Feminist Buzzkills Live, the show that has never plowed into Gwyneth Paltrow on the slopes.
Yet.
Well, yeah, it's true. That was my illustrious co-host, Moji Alawadel, giving her commentary on the Gwynny case.
Yes. Plowing into Gwyneth is something to look forward to, right, Marie?
Unclear. Hello to our listeners. Coming up on today's show, it's Trans Day of Visibility. We are excited to be joined by comedian, actor, and trendy man, Ian Harvey, and founder of the Trans Empowerment Project, Jack Knoxville. How are we all doing on this Friday?
Oh, man. Well, I am happy to be elevating our trans brothers today. But, man, you know, it's one of those days where the week has been so shitty. I feel like we should just acknowledge the families of Tennessee. Yep. And just say that in a state that has been so profoundly passing anti-abortion bills, claiming they're pro-life, they simply do not care about the lives of children. Our hearts go out to you, and we'll be fighting for you, and we will not be sending only thoughts and prayers. We will be sending all the stuff that is important. But it's also, it's been a good and a bad and a medium week. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Moji, before we get into all of the week's hot takes, we're going to talk about a little bit about some good news, right?
We finally have a little slither of good news, and I think something that'll give us all a little hope. A coalition of 22 Democratic Lieutenant Attorneys General have formed the Reproductive Freedom Coalition, and their goal is to advance model abortion rights legislation, pro-abortion executive orders, and push more federal funds towards abortion access and other reproductive care access. It's so
good. That's awesome. So good. So I guess I want to ask this question. So we've seen like for a month that like in early February, the Democratic governors started the Reproductive Freedom Alliance. Then the 12 attorneys general started the, you know, they're taking things to really expand medication abortion. And then now this. So what's their deal, Moji?
Oh, this is great. So this is incredible because they are the lieutenant governors. And I think a lot of what they do is just kind of sort of start crafting the legislation for the governors to sign and start communicating with each other. And also the model legislation part is really exciting to me because that's something that our side really hasn't done, which is really look at the policies that can help promote our cause and then reproduce them around the country. And so this is kind of excited. It's new. So there's still time to know like what their plan is. It was only announced a few days ago. There's still more to find out, but it's a very hopeful, strong start.
I find it sort of interesting. It's 21 governors and 21 lieutenant governors. And out of those 21, both the governors and the lieutenant governors who are Democrats in Kansas and Kentucky haven't signed on. And with Kansas, with the people of Kansas overwhelmingly voting in a ballot initiative that they want to make sure that reproductive rights remain, you know, in their state as the Constitution allows for them. I think it's super bizarre that the Attorney General and Governor didn't sign on to this.
Right. And then you have states like Wisconsin where their lieutenant governor did. And we know the people of Wisconsin want abortion, but those politicians don't. And that's like a scary place to kind of stand out. It's weird when you have the support, to not like go along with the support.
I feel like when all of these ballot initiatives were passed during the last election cycle, Liz, you made a really good point that people would vote for abortion rights in passing these ballot initiatives. And then they'd also vote for these Republican legislators who would move forward anti-abortion legislation. So I think there's a disconnect in either how some voters, and especially places that are known as Republican places, think about how these issues become issues.
Well, I think that's true. And I think, you know, I mean, and then you've got a state like Louisiana, let's not forget also that Democratic does not mean pro-choice or pro-abortion.
Yeah.
Their Democratic governor is as bad as they come on abortion. He's terrible, and the environment and every fucking other thing.
What do you think? I know we got to round out to other things, but I was thinking about, okay, what would we like these coalitions, these, you know, hopefully more than happy hour groups to actually do. I would love parental notification to get taken down in Michigan. I know folks have been working on it, but it's like, it's not up. It's not on the ballot yet to go away. And also the CBC,
yes.
Like that, I think, especially follow the lead of other governors. But what do you all think?
I love that. And I think too, like the CPCs, especially following California's lead on that, because they have the model legislation that says if you've been hoodwinked by a fake clinic,
you can smoke. I'm sure the statute of limitations for me is closed, but thank you.
My hope is they follow the lead of Massachusetts and Minnesota and take the model legislation around saying that if somebody travels to those states and has an abortion and they live in a state where it's outlawed, that those states will not turn them in or prosecute them in any way. So I really would like to see that solidified so that folks can travel freely while we try to make things better and know that they can go have an abortion without.
I also know we're going to get to it, but New Mexico is doing great stuff and we're going to get to it later in the pod.
Definitely. We'll throw that back at them at the end. Well, this is a good way to start off the show. So let's bring the joy to a screeching halt and toss it over to Molly with a recap of some of this week's biggest, not greatest stories. Molly, take it.
Way harsh, Ty. Thank you so much. Welcome back to the steaming news dump where March Madness is every single month of the year. So our pals in Florida have introduced a 6-week ban that's likely to pass the Senate by the end of next week. Now, this would have devastating effects on abortion access in the South. And I'm from Miami, so I know it takes 9 hours to get to the nearest state driving up that godforsaken shaft. And, you know, speaking of dicks, North Carolina lawmakers have introduced a total abortion ban that could throw doctors in prison for life. So it probably won't pass right now, but it definitely doesn't encourage any doctors to stay or train in the state. I guess match day is about to get a whole lot more high stakes. Oh my God, I matched with prison. Yay. On to Louisiana, another state that thinks MDs pose a bigger threat than M14s. This week, after the school shooting happened in Tennessee, Representative Clay Higgins of Louisiana said, "There's no such thing as gun violence. There's only human violence. And the number one cause of death for children in America remains abortion." Let me remind everybody listening, Louisiana has the highest rate of maternal mortality in the country. You know, I guess if a baby really wants to kill its mother, it'll find a way. And that way is by being born in Louisiana. And in Texas, apparently it's not the mass shootings that are traumatizing kids. It's men in wigs lip-syncing to Ethel Merman. In just another day of oppression in the Lone Star State, lawmakers have proposed a bill that would turn the abortion vigilante bounty hunter law on drag shows and trans people. Texas is well on its way to replacing cops and Miranda rights with randos just saying, "You're under arrest because this town ain't big enough for the both of us." That's been your steaming news dump. I'm sorry it was so dark today. Back to you.
Molly, so just to be clear, a Tennessee adult fetus carries out a school shooting and useless politicians in the aftermath turn it around to target abortion in a state that abortion is illegal in.
Classic move. These guys will use abortion as a deflection from anything. Their wives catch them on Grindr and they're like, "Well, abortion grinds babies. So, huh? Thanks, guys. This has been dark."
We're going to dive into the big stories that we want to unpack. But Moji, before we do that, you have an update on the BS you guys talked about last week in Utah.
Yes, I do. Oh my God. So last week, Marie and I were together. We talked about Utah legislators passing this law that made it illegal for the Health and Human Services to license abortion clinics, which means that all of the abortion clinics in the state will have to close when their licenses expire. And to do this, they said, oh, we're just going to move all of the abortions in the state to the hospital. But it was announced this week that 5 Utah hospitals have been taken over by a Catholic health system.
Yep. And again, this is a state that on paper, you can get abortion to 18 weeks.
Which is also terrible, but great also, right? Much better than 6 weeks.
Great, but like the hypocrisy with everything else.
Well, what's crazy is like Utah has not been, they have an abortion ban for more than 18 weeks on the books. They just keep getting caught tied up in court because they're unconstitutional. And so they created this trap law literally to work around that legal issue and just end abortion access. What's wild is this week was the reporting about the Catholic hospital takeover, but apparently the merger happened in February. They knew this was happening when they wrote this law or when they passed it.
Oh.
And Catholic hospital systems all run the same. This one's called, I love Common Spirit.
No space
Health,
between common and spirit, just so you know.
Oh,
Holy like, Spirit was okay, already taken.
Common Spirit, if you're commonly that. But like, I don't know if people understand, like, you know, we know the Catholic hospitals don't allow IVF and don't allow ectopic pregnancy treatment and don't allow all this shit. But like, I don't know if people understand that the entire way Catholic hospitals work is that the ethics are written by the U.S. Conference on Catholic Bishops, and you have to get permission from a bishop in a Catholic hospital to get any procedure that might be unethical.
And 1 in 6 beds in this country are Catholic hospital beds.
How many Catholics are in Utah? It doesn't seem like a lot. So like, you know, it's a mess. So Utah is just, you know, everybody's in the race for doing the worst. And Maria's about to jump into the lead. Who's in the lead right now, which I'm going to say is Idaho in their full court press of becoming the worst. Marie, what is Idaho doing now?
Well, is their legislature is stepping up its cruelty this spring. A bill that prosecutes the helpers of young people trying to access abortion care passed through the House this month and is expected to get Senate approval. Adults, even including the older sibling of a pregnant young person, will face criminal abortion trafficking charges for assisting someone within the state in procuring an abortion.
What does assisting in the state look like, Marie, our practical support maven?
That could be as much, quote unquote, as recruiting a young person for abortion, like much like some special Girl Scouts. Is it giving info? Is it letting someone know, hey, this is an option in addition to staying pregnant? It also goes after anyone who works with a young person to conceal an abortion, to provide abortion medication to a young person, and transporting them within the state. And this is really, really clever because abortion is illegal in Idaho. So these folks are smart. They know you have to do some sort of interstate travel to get out of the state. So that's where they're going to get you. They're not going to say, oh, it's because you're popping over to the state next door to you who's going to provide safe legal care. They're going to get you inside the state for supporting someone.
As you've driven someone to the border.
Yep.
And, you know, I just think that that is so incredible because when you think about what that's like, you know, if your older sister or your auntie or somebody, you know, drove you to a post office box to pick up pills, all of it is wild. And I don't know how this affects if you're in the foster system or if you have a guardian ad litem and that person's trying to help you, or if you're a young person that's pregnant and it's through, you know, a parent or something. Like,
yep.
I just don't understand like how any of this is constitutional, because I feel like intercommerce things, like the Constitution and the Supreme Court solidly ruled on that shit for a long time. And also the trafficking piece is I want people to think about the trafficking piece is just another path to personhood also, because it's, if we say trafficking, they're also talking about the fetus. So moving the fetus around is considered trafficking. So if they put personhood on the pregnant person and the pregnancy, we're looking at another way to end run into personhood, which the trafficking is not just the person seeking the abortion, but also if they are considering that the pregnant person is pregnant with a baby, then we could find ourselves in that mess also.
Also, what I think is really terrifying about this is that there's no remedy, right? If there was abortion in the state, then a person could maybe have a judicial bypass, but you can't. So there literally is no way for a minor in Idaho without fully involving their parents to access abortion care, period.
And Marie, I love what you said, and I'm going to repeat it. Marie said the brilliance. I'm just going to echo it. And that is, you cannot get an abortion in Idaho right now. So that the way that they circumvented around that was to say that you are aiding and abetting if you take someone to the border or over the border, because you have to drive through the state to get to the border. It is wild.
Also, they're redefining trafficking. They're literally redefining the word. It really means that that someone is being used, right? You traffic someone to use them or the means of their labor, whereas helping someone get an abortion that they want is in no way using or trafficking them.
Yeah, it's a totally new addition to the criminal code in the state. Abortion trafficking doesn't exist. And this is criminal, not civil.
Will you lay out what the penalties are for this, Marie?
Yes. Abortion traffickers can get 2 to 5 years in prison. And the law's language in it that would allow the state's attorney general to supersede if a local prosecutor said, oh, I don't want to go after someone.
Wow. The escalation is so alarming. And, you know, as people who talk about this and ingest this information and work with people day in and day out, it feels scary to be surprised.
It does feel scary to be surprised, like you're not paying attention. And speaking of paying attention and escalation, Liz, why don't you lay out an alarming trend we've been following and talking about? And I feel like I blink and more crap has happened.
It's true. So, you know, a lot of times we love on the podcast to find a story that we've been following for a long time and then realizing that the public doesn't really know about it. And it's something that keeps growing and getting worse. So since 2019, there's been this 37-year-old virgin and Texas pastor named Mark Lee Dixon, who has been traveling across Texas and other states as far as Iowa and Ohio and Florida, going from small conservative town to small conservative town, trying to convince the city councils to declare their community something called a sanctuary city for the unborn. Now, what that means is the town would ban all abortion clinics and all abortion-related activity in that town. And over the past 4 years, the dude has traveled to over 400 cities and has had 65 city councils vote to implement this status. So Moji, Marie, and I wanted to do a deep dive into the history of this dude, what this trend looks like in red and blue states, and what can be done about it. So, y'all, let's just start out with who Mark Lee Dixon is. And we all have kind of our fan favorites about this dude, and we've been following him around. So does anybody want to kick in on their, like, Mark Lee Dixon background, or you want me to do? What do you want to do?
Again, you brought up one of my favorite things with, like, this man is a 37-year-old virgin, which means he doesn't ever have to grapple with abortion from any perspective.
That's right.
Emoji, stop making fun. Stop making fun of 37-year-olds, Moji. We're just fine.
You're fine. I feel like, you know, Marie, if you're looking,
you could fix that whole problem for us, Marie.
Never. I truly could say a 10-foot pole. I could truly say a 10-foot pole.
So, but it's true. Like, what's half fascinating too in researching, you know, the first place you always go is Wikipedia just to kind of see what's going on, right? And it's like, it says Mark Lee Dixon, self-described virgin, and admitted never had any relationship to anyone who's had an abortion. Well, that makes sense, virgin. But also, dude, I think was one of the founders and certainly has been the director for since 2014 of an organization called East Texas Right to Life. He used to go to county fairs where his grandpa, who was super into like anti-abortion weird imagery, he would have like tables at county fairs with all those little plastic fetuses, and he would study them. Creepy. And he's just become this one man kind of Johnny Appleseed of like anti-abortion.
That's what's wild, that it very much seems like it's him. He seems to be the driving force to the work that he did. Again, in the research, yeah, he fully consulted with the man who created Texas's SB8, which is the law that when we had Roe kept abortion from being legal in Texas after approximately six weeks.
He also, apparently when he's not just traveling the country trying to get city councils to do his bidding, he was also at January 6th. And his thing was, I was at January 6th, but I didn't enter the Capitol. Oh, but I'm sure he was nonviolently walking around asking all those people to maybe just step back a bit.
Oh yeah, is that what you think? Yes, you're absolutely sure. I'm sure that's what he was doing, 100%.
100%. And he's kind of this, just enigma who, like, we don't know who's funding his ship, but the dude is, if he's been to 600 cities, and we were kind of looking into the finances and I was trying to figure it out. And like, they filed a thing from, like, I don't know, like 2010 or something that said they had $50,000, but someone is funding this dude.
Yep.
I don't know who it is and we don't know who it is and we're going to keep digging, but someone's funding this dude. And so you're probably saying, like, wait, travels around the country and talks to these city councils into banning abortion in their cities. How can he do, how can that be legal to have a city ordinance that might trump a state? Does anybody want to talk about that?
Okay. What's especially exciting about these things that he creates, he was doing them when Roe was the law of the land, when we had a federally recognized constitutional right to abortion. He had, I think, at least 25 cities that he'd done this in. And he's using our good old friend, the Comstock Act. In 1873, Comstock wrote this law, and it basically said you can't mail obscene material around the country. And this included pornography, it included birth control. Liz, you remember other stuff that includes?
Include anything that would be considered something that would encourage sexual deviancy in a community, right? And I just want to be clear, this dude was a mailman. He was like the postmaster general of some town. And he took his Pied Piper bullshit all the way to Congress and said, hey, I wrote this. Will you make it a law? And they were like, that sounds good. And they did. And it's been on the books since 1873. And this is the law that, like, that the people bringing the Miffy case have cited as the law that says that we shouldn't, the FDA should, you know, pull back on Miffy. It's not legal to have it.
Last year, our Justice Department said, actually, these interpretations of the Comstock law are not valid. There's a whole page saying that this is actually not right. But don't let facts slow down a man with a plan.
That's right. And so he's convinced these city councils that the Comstock law can apply. They have voted that it does. And so I think that gets us to, what kind of cities is he going to? You know, he's not going to, like, New York or Portland or even Dallas or Austin, right? He's gone to 400 cities, 65. Marie, talk a little bit about the kind of cities that he's targeting, because I think that's super important in this story.
These are smaller cities and towns, areas with conservative populations and communities. Like, it's not the state of New York. It's not the state of Illinois. We're talking about Ohio, Texas. He goes as well in spaces that he already knows local conservatives are going to sign on to his whole scheme. And also, these are areas that don't have abortion clinics. So it's just stigma to the wind, but it's harmful because we can see this trend that it turns into.
Yeah. And so when you get 65 cities and more, as he has got all Bristol, Virginia's is they're looking at and all these places. So, you know, if you start setting a trend, then does that trend become the will of the people, right? And so that's something that courts consider in that case. And so a lot of these places are towns of like 400 or 500 people.
Older populations.
Mostly white folks. But the thing that has been the trend post-Roe for him is that in states like New Mexico, that border oppression states, clinics have talked about opening up in those states right over the borders to service populations that no longer could get care. So there's a town called Hobbs, New Mexico, right across the border from Texas, Rio Grande Valley, and clinics were talking about opening there. Well, Mark Lee Dixon gets wind of that, gets to the city council and says, hey, a clinic wants to come in and open here. And the city council says, no dice. So it's also this preventative way of creating abortion havens for the border states that have banned it. So it's all a fucking mess. But the good news is, Moj, I think I'm going to turn it over to you. It's not hopeless, right? Because New Mexico was like, nope, nope, nope. No clue about what New Mexico's doing.
Most of this crazy happened in Texas. He, like, basically went through Texas, and this is around, you know, this is Texas. We all know Texas hates abortion. So no one in Texas was like, we want to stop this. But in New Mexico, he, like, went to two or three towns, and basically the attorney general in New Mexico was like, oh, hell no, fuck this shit. And immediately he went to the New Mexico judiciary and was like, filing some, like, we can't do this. And this is really exciting because the New Mexico legislature basically took this problem and crafted new laws. It's HB 7, which is called the Reproductive Health Care Freedom Act. And it basically prohibits cities, counties, or citizens from restricting reproductive health care, including abortion and gender affirming care. And it's almost like New Mexico looked at what happened in Texas and said, not in our backyard.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, when we talk about what should the lieutenant governors and the governors and all these people be doing, this is the kind of piece of legislation that, when you said we were going to talk about it earlier, this is it. And I just want to remind folks also too, that cities like Austin, Texas, and Dallas, and there have been city councils who have put into play, like, we will not prosecute or push to seek out people who've had abortion in those states. So there are some liberal city councils who have put proactive and preemptive strikes in place because of this dude. So that's also happening and good. So I think that we have to demand of our lieutenant governors and governors that this should be maybe priority number one, so that small communities can't do harm to folks who are needing care in a state that has said abortion is legal here. So, wow, that is a lot of story, but I think it's important. And we'll be talking more about sanctuary cities and Mark Lee Dixon, because dude is on the move. We want to find out where he's funded. We want to keep you up to date on that. But
as always, the best and most informative place to get information about abortion care and how to fund yours is ineedanate.com. Marie, are you ready to tell us about our first guest? I'm really excited.
Yes, we are excited to welcome Jack Knoxville, the founder and executive director of Trans Empowerment Project, and also the first trans mask candidate for political office in the Southern United States. Welcome, Jack.
Hi.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so glad you could be here.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation. I am so excited to be here.
I was hoping you could start off for our listeners by telling us a little bit about the work that Trans Empowerment Project does and how in the past few years, especially, y'all have grown.
Sure. So Trans Empowerment Project actually started in 2016, end of 2016, as a very small initiative in Knoxville, Tennessee. I ran for office in Knoxville, and in doing so, I connected with a lot of trans folks in the community that I had not previously been connected to, heard a lot of very similar narrative around dysphoria, depression, isolation, and I was like, we're all amazing. Why are we doing this? Like, we need to just get together and start empowering each other. So Trans Empowerment Project was born out of that idea. And I started the organization with a clothing swap because I didn't want it to be an organization that was taxing this community, but rather an organization that could bring power to the community. And so I know from my own personal experiences, especially at that time, how difficult it was and how awkward it was sometimes to shop for or come into connection with the clothing that I needed to feel solid about my own identity. And so just having a space, having a way to be able to connect and do that and provide that resource for each other felt like such a good and natural next step. So I organized a clothing swap, gave away free clothes to over 100 trans and non-binary folks in the Knoxville, Tennessee area. And, you know, was just really blown away at the turnout that I saw. And from that grew into Trans Empowerment Project. We are now one of the largest providers of direct aid in the country for trans people. And everything we do is to center disabled, queer, trans, and intersex people of color in our fights, because this is the community that equity should be getting built for. And so for us, we are essentially working to affect systemic change, but we're getting there through cultural change, because that's the change that sticks around. I mean, Trump showed us, hey, anybody with a big enough eraser can come around and get rid of decades of people's blood, sweat, and tears.
Yep.
But what you can't get rid of is that cultural element. When people see the humanity in each other and just show up and continue to tell those stories. So this is us. This is what we're doing. And so part of how we're doing that is, you know, we're inviting other people in, which I know we'll talk about soon.
Yeah, no, actually, I'm super excited about the ways you're inviting people in. And I'm so glad you started by reminding everyone that we need to center trans people. You've recently started a new program called Calling In Our Accomplices that is focused on cross-movement solidarity and all the ways that cis people can better advocate for trans justice as individuals and as organizations. Can you tell us a little more about this program and how people can get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So I will say this, all of this is... has really come to me from being an observer here. And also in the work that I've done over the last few years, the connections I've made, the people I've talked to, the communities I've come across. I mean, my work has definitely enabled me to travel and build some real amazing relationships with people. But it's been frustrating to sit in the seats that I've sat in and hear the rhetoric of like, trans lives matter, while seeing the exact opposite come to fruition. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And especially from people that I know, like, I want to believe the best in these people. Like, I see it. I see their care. I hear it when we talk. But then there's such a disconnect in what I'm seeing them put forward. And so in talking to more people about that, what came very clear to me was like, it's not that they don't want to do these things. They're so scared of getting it wrong. And so for a lot of people, that fear is causing a lot of actual paralysis in that movement. And so this like fear of cancel culture, the fear of getting dragged, the fear of being attacked online, those are all very valid fears. And I get it because I deal with that. I deal with that all the time. And it's not fun, you know? So like, yeah, nobody wants to voluntarily put themselves out there. But at the same time, I think if we call in our accomplices, if we set our folks up for success, then we're creating a whole different opportunity. What it comes down to for me too is what I've also seen way too often in this movement is trans people keep getting, especially trans people of color, we just keep getting pushed towards the back of the bus. Here's the thing, I'm not sitting in the back of the bus anymore. I'm actually driving, thanks. and this is what we have to do because, like I said, I mean, if we are going to be sincere when we're talking about equity from, I don't care which organization, for-profit, non-profit, where you're coming from, if you are talking about equity, you have to center this community, disabled, queer, trans, and intersex people of color in that conversation. If you're not, you are not talking about equity. You might be talking about racial equity. You might be talking about some semblance of equity, but you still don't have the whole picture. So this is another thing for me. I see this as an opportunity for us to create that alignment across all organizations, because in yet another play by the white supremacist handbook is that divide and conquer tactics that they're using, right? So every issue feels like its own little silo. Reproductive rights is over here. Trans rights are over there. Climate justice, y'all go over to the left. You know, we can't operate like that because that's how they're winning. But what we have to do is we have to create that alignment. We have to be aligned on the fact that at the end of the day, what is keeping us all disconnected and from being able to reach our highest potential is white supremacy. Yep. Until we tackle white supremacy, until we actually have real conversations about what equity is, we're just staying busy on a hamster wheel. We're not actually getting anywhere. So, you know, we have to get serious. Do we want to see results or do we just want to stay busy? We're trying to keep dollars in our pockets and paychecks. Cool. Or do we actually want to see real change? So this is what calling in our accomplices is. It's me throwing down the gauntlet being like, y'all want to see real change? Y'all really want to have change? Come on, let's go. We got a whole bus. We are loading this bus up. We got plenty of seats. Let's make it happen. Let's build this change together. We got a revolution and a whole new world to conceptualize and build together. Let's do it.
It's so intersectional, everything you've just laid out, right? First, these white supremacists, first off, a lot of them we know by name because they're elected. They're in office and they're proud of it. And they want us all to know this. And they're using these tools of the anti-abortion movement because they've noticed that more, right? They've seen, the need for abortion earlier than the need for gender affirming care, even though we know that's always been around since the history of people existing. And so now we have these legislations that are using those tools, rhetoric, fear mongering, outright lying within legislation, putting things on the public record to eradicate trans folks. And you talked about, calling in, what actions should we take to fight this and how in particular to amplify support as cis folks, as the three cis folks on this podcast? Mm-hmm. What are you recommending?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, you're doing it right now. Listen to trans people, you know, uplift the stories and experiences that were actually happening. Let people know the real harm that is being experienced. You know, we can't gloss over facts and details because they don't fit our narratives. We've got to be uncomfortable sometimes. We have to face the truth about what is actually happening around us. And we have to understand where each of us fits into that. So the fact that you're taking that initiative to say, like, okay, this is who I am, this is where I'm at in the movement, where can I get better? That is the first step. That's number one. So you're already doing it. So good job on that one. The second part of this is really to show up in the places where we're saying we need it. So school board meetings, like, we need more cis people at school boards. We need more cis people showing up on the ground, because here's the other thing. As the disabled trans person of color in the room, I'm not trying to be the target.
I'm not trying to
go be out there in the front lines, because guess who they're coming for first? And I'm going to be the most impacted by whatever they're hurling.
Yes.
Now, hey, look, the less marginalized you are, the further to the front you need to be when it comes to fighting this on the ground work. But as far as, like, you know, making space for disabled trans people of color, because our leaders exist, we're here. The other thing is, we are the experts on the room when it comes to trying to figure out how to exist without white supremacy. We've never been allowed to exist within this white supremacy model. I've had no choice but to exist like that. So make space for these thought leaders, because we're here. And, you know, showing up in the ways that you can, like, in whatever lane you occupy, like, for instance, especially within the feminist movement spaces, one thing that has, like, irked me to no avail is all this fighting with J.K. Rowling. The turfiness. We have got to really be explicit about the fact that this divisiveness, every time I hear that rhetoric, every time I see that narrative out there, that's ignorant saying, like, I need help. I need education. So that's where I need my cis allies to say, hey, hold on, I got this conversation. I don't need to have that conversation, because trust me when I tell you, it is so triggering and it's so difficult to continuously have these conversations and to be expected to stay stuck in harm. I mean, what I have found over the years is it's like a strange obsession. I have to continuously lift up all the harm that I've ever experienced for people to see the humanity in me. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't be the narrative that trans people have to tell. And so that's another thing we're trying to change at TEP, is, like, we want to start lifting up more stories of empowerment, more success stories, helping to see that future, what it can look like for us to succeed and thrive. You know, so creating more space for us to be able to tell those stories while our cis friends and accomplices take the helm and take on more of that hard labor. That's huge. That is, like, the biggest thing that y'all can do, and especially taking the time to educate and educate each other.
You know, I love that you just said that, Jack, because I just had that very experience on Twitter where Anna Gasparian from the Young Turks weighed in on some bullshit about, I'm a woman, I don't want to be called a birthing person. And I was like, well, I'm a woman. I'm a cis woman. I don't feel any amount of my womanness being taken away by including everyone who could possibly be experiencing these harms. I don't understand. First of all, no one's referring to anyone as, hi, I'm the birthing woman. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that is just, like, so backwards.
Also, not all women are birthing people.
Yeah.
Again, me. And trans women, you know, but to me, it was just like the labor that conversation should have should be coming from cis women. We should be providing the labor, because resetting somebody is crucial. Because and people were in the comments were like, look at her only addressing the cis woman. And it's like, it's a bummer that she can't actually defend herself with her bizarro comments. But still, like, I hear you on that. And I think it's super important. And I'm so glad you're here to just give these really basic humanity tips for people, because it is really basic.
It is basic, but, you know, I think sometimes we overthink it. You know, we want to make things more complicated than it is, but really it comes down to relational organizing. Who's going to listen to me over you? The people in your life that you've already built that trust with, the people in your life that already know you, they're going to listen to you before they're going to listen to me. I live in the Southeast. I'm not going door knocking in the Southeast, because I already know how those conversations are going to go. I've been there. I've done that. I've done the work. done it many times. I'm good. I am so good on that. But I will absolutely have the conversations I need to with the helpers. And that's another part of the calling in our accomplices for me, is that really I found myself getting caught up in all these fights, especially post George Floyd, post Tony McDade, post all of the, I mean, just all of it. We all went through it. We don't need to relive it. So we're not going to go down that rabbit hole. But what I will say is, through all of that, I found myself expending so much labor and so much energy, so mad, so frustrated, so stressed out at like the ignorance and the caucasity of some of these people. And I really had to get to a place where I was like, you know what? Not today. I can't spend any more labor and energy on people who don't want to hear it from me. They're not going to hear it from me because they've already made up their minds about who I am and what my agenda is and all this other stuff. So like, you know what? Why do that to myself over and over again? I mean, what's that whole quote about madness? Doing the same thing over and over again,
yeah.
Expecting different results. Yeah. And I was getting to that point of like driving myself mad. And I'm like, you know what? My time, my energy, my labor is so much better spent working with the helpers, the people who actually want to show up, who are showing that they care about this community, who maybe they need a little bit of help. Maybe they need, you know, some guidance on like, how do I address this thing? Cool. That is so much easier to deal with than having to stay stuck in all that negativity. And so I really am trying to encourage my employees to do the same thing as each of these folks is getting ramped up in their roles, which, by the way, I actually have a team of employees, y'all. That's amazing. I started out with just basically me doing 5 jobs to make sure that this organization got off the ground. And over the last 18 months or so, I've actually been able to hire staff, because that's the other part, is listening to all this rhetoric out there. Look, as far as I'm concerned, these are the sounds of white supremacy crumbling, and I'm here for it.
I feel like that's the hopeful angle that I like to get onto. I think people really discount how exhausting it is to have to prove your humanity to people who fundamentally don't believe in it. There was a shooter in Tennessee this week who, according to reports, may be a trans person, and all of these terrible transphobic actors who we've referred to already are almost gleeful about this, as though the fact that the shooter was a trans person justifies their bigotry. As a trans man and an activist in the South, is there anything you'd like to say about this situation and the way this kind of bad faith rhetoric doubly harms our communities?
I actually have quite a bit to say on that one. Well, first and foremost, I guess I'll start with the last thing you asked. Every time I see a comment that's like lifting up this trans person, it's like, oh my God, see, I told you they were terrible. Here's the thing. That is the biggest racist dog whistle. You could not be more stereotypical in that approach than to do exactly that. We're talking about one trans person over the history of how many school shooters? I mean, because if we did that every time a white cis guy did something.
Right.
I mean, I don't think we'd ever get off the mic. Really?
Mm-hmm. We would never get off the mic.
Right. And if we were serious and we start talking about white on white crime and all this other stuff, like, these conversations would, I think the other conversations would die down a little bit because they'd see. But at the end of the day, what it comes down to for me is we got so many issues that are happening right now all around us, and especially in the Southeast. Look, I was in Tennessee. I left Tennessee for a reason. I saw the writing on the wall. I mean, when you pass the insane laws of allowing anybody over the age of 18 to publicly, openly carry guns just because, like, hey, why not? These people carry their guns around like they're security blankets. Like, enough with the guns. That's first. And then on top of it, you have a state that is so adamant to stay rooted in hatred and such a whitewashed history. And I mean, there are so many problems in the state of Tennessee, y'all. So many. I'm surprised this is the first time we've had this issue. And it's sad to say, because it's not okay. No part of what happened is okay. Mm-hmm. It wasn't okay for the kids who got shot. It wasn't okay for the shooter to be in a position that they felt that was what they needed to do in this world. Mm-hmm. But I tell you right now, when you come after people constantly, like if you poke and 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 poke, how many times are you going to keep poking somebody and then feign concern that they had a reaction? Because at some point in time, you have to stop poking. You have to start doing stuff to support and lift up these people. All people, I don't care if that shooter was cis or trans or gay or straight, black, white, I don't care. Not one single mass school shooter should have been put in a position they were in, period, to feel that that's what they needed to do. Mm-hmm. So yes. This is exactly why we have calling in our accomplices, is because this is intersectional. Every issue is a trans issue. Every issue is a feminist issue. Every issue is all of us an issue. And we have to start seeing that intersectionality. We got to start doing better, reaching across the aisle to make things better. But this includes mental health, physical health, access to care, real care when you get into health systems, all of which is missing from Tennessee right now. And then you have the lack of actual education in that state, let alone factual histories. It's problem after problem that's compounded there. You have people that are basically allowing that their entire communities to stay ignorant on how to even protect themselves from STDs. And
yes, yes.
Come on, y'all. Most basic education to anything. They don't know how to protect themselves. They don't know how to protect themselves from anything. And it's just mind-blowing to me to see the rhetoric around all of this, especially because there's so much finger-pointing, and that's what always happens. It's finger-pointing. This person, that party, this politician, that leader. It's all of them, and it's all of us. It's all of us allowing mediocrity to lead this country into the places it has been leading us into. It's all of them because, hey, you know, what motivation they have to get better. The motivation they have to get worse is the donation dollars that keep ramping up in their pockets, especially every time we see these emails go out from Marsha Blackburn calling on all of her constituents because, you know, she's protecting their womanhood from trans people and all this other stuff. It's that lying and that manipulation and the lack of access. They're not going to let you learn about this in the school system because if you know the truth, you don't buy their lies anymore.
Yep.
And we have to start calling it what it is. And we got to have real conversations that include the entire conversation, not just half the conversation.
We are so grateful that you are able to join us this week, Jack. We're going to share all this information with our listeners in our show notes. We'll make sure you have all the links to check out not only the Trans Empowerment Project, but also to learn how to call yourself in as an accomplice. Thank you so much, Jack.
Thank you, Jack.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you to Jack Knoxville for joining us for International Trans Day of Visibility. You can learn more about Trans Empowerment Project and follow his work at the links in our show notes.
And now, the party game that is faster than Cards Against Humanity and more fun than Pictionary, 6 degrees of Abortion. This is when Moji and I take a story from the news and Liz has 6 chances to link it to abortion. Let's see if we can stump her this week. Moji.
Liz, you feeling lucky? You feeling lucky, Liz?
I'm in Vegas.
I feel good about this one. Okay. August last year, Ohio deputies raided the home of rapper Afro Man. They broke the gate to his property, his front door. They dismantled his security system and allegedly confiscated over $5,000 in cash. He wasn't home, but his wife was, and she filmed the raid. And when it was over, there were no charges because it was kind of trumped up. And they returned all but $400 of his money. This is a terrible story about police brutality or police abuse, but he channeled his frustration at this violation to make a rap album lambasting the cops. He used the footage from his wife for music videos and for merch. They're hilarious. He made some of the money back. Currently, these trash ass cops have the unbridled caucasity to be suing him for profits from his album and videos of the invasion that they led. We want you to try in 6 degrees or less to link Afro Man to abortion.
I'm not even going to try because I don't even know who he is. I don't know who he is. Oh, you win.
We're going to send you the link to the story and then you will know. Go Marie Emoji.
I mean, if you could link trash ass cops to abortion, well.
Try that. Let's make it fun. Try it. Link trash ass cops to abortion in 6 degrees or less.
Cops are trash and are constantly in league with abortion people, like in Kentucky, like in North Carolina, like in Minneapolis, like in New York City. So I just named four major places where cops are literally aiding and abetting anti-abortion extremists, and actually not even aiding and abetting, but plus guiding and giving comfort to, bringing water to protesters, colluding with, helping anti-abortion protesters get to the Planned Parenthood while like literally arresting and sidling pro-abortion protesters who are simply trying to make sure they don't have access and proximity to patients. So cops are trash, and cops are part of the trash problem when it comes to trying to get justice, when clinics are bombed, when escorts and patients are being harmed, and when doctors are being stalked and harassed.
So that is not a win for you, but everything you said there is correct, and we co-sign. Anyway, the videos are funny. We're going to put a link to the story. Go to his Instagram. It's kind of funny what he's done. He's made lemonade out of lemons.
I'm going to look at it.
That was fun of Maria Naitoff win. I feel like it's been a little time. I feel great about myself. I'm going to sleep well tonight if I sleep at all. Anyway, we also have, we are always grateful to our sponsors. This is the only way we can do this podcast. And Marie, will you tell them who is sponsoring us today?
Are you a red-blooded American truth seeker with family members who don't understand your important research? Are the internet searches that help you expose godless feminists and homosexuals constantly being misconstrued? Then you need a ExpressVPN, the only virtual private network designed specifically for the righteous culture warrior. With ExpressVPN, you can surf the web with confidence, knowing that your browsing activity is completely hidden from family members with woke prying eyes, hell-bent on canceling pregnancies, and Americans like you. Whether you're investigating how someone who isn't you could get abortion pills because of a marriage bed betrayal, or scouring Grindr in the name of God-fearing research, ExpressVPN will mask each of your searches with typical Christian terminology, like, where is God's glory hole? Or just Jesus stuff, so you won't have to explain yourself to anyone accessing your browser history. And if you act now, you'll receive a 20% discount on ExpressVPN, and the popular browser add-on is this porn? Just enter the promo code BORNHUB at checkout. ExpressVPN, when you need to search and destroy.
That product sounds terrible.
10 out of 10 would not purchase that product. I 100% feel like, oh, actually, you'll find some dumb shit who was like, I have to get that because how are people going to, I can't do it. Anyway, should we move on to our amazing guest?
Absolutely. I'm so excited to talk to him.
I know. I am too. Coming up is one of our favorite comics and actors. He has toured with us in some of the most hostile states for abortion and for trans folks living. He has done comedy shows with us. He has helped independent abortion providers. And if you live in LA and you need some work done on your house, he's for hire as your local trendy man, and he's going to get into that with us. Please welcome the amazing Ian Harvey. Hi, Ian.
Hi, Ian.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Ian.
Marie emoji. Hi, everybody.
So many people to say hi to you. It seems like a forever ago, but it was 2017 that we spent a lot of time in a filthy van together driving across the South servicing abortion providers, you know, in like Mississippi, Georgia, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Alabama.
And little did I know that more than ever today, our fights are so fucking aligned.
Yep.
Yes.
More than ever. Mm-hmm. And that to me is just so, kind of mind-blowing, because I kind of felt like, even like on tour with you all, I felt like I was kind of coasting in a way, like lucky and privileged trans guy who, you know, is, you know, here to
had
support
Kat Green as your bodyguard.
Yeah. And to support people who need abortions, abortion care providers, and thinking, you know, and now I'm like, you know, family, like abortion family, like mm-hmm. we, let's work together, because there is a shit show going on. And you guys have laid the groundwork in such a massive way of how to navigate around all this bullshit legislation. It's not just lawsuits. It's like, how are we going to set up systems for care for the people who need it.
We have the same enemies.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's all the same architects and the same garbage people doing the same exact like map of like shitty things to people to take away their autonomy. It's absolutely insane. I had no idea that back then that this would be the landscape. It's really mind-blowing to me.
Also, the tactics, the literal everything. It's like, hey, let's try bounty hunting law on abortion. Hey, let's try bounty hunting law on parents of trans kids. Hey, yeah. You know, it's like the playbook is the same. The bad actors are the same. The one thing that I think that was so cool was, first of all, you said yes to a whole bunch of people saying, hey, let's drag you through the South where it's really not great. And you were like, okay. But like, I talk about it a lot, folks, but I'd love to hear your take on how cool it was to be doing the shows for the progressives and the fighters who lived in those states, like going up against all the odds and having them show up for a show.
Well, the proof that you said this, and I didn't believe it until I saw the numbers of people that would show up at these events and shows that we put together, is that you're like, there's good people everywhere. And I was like, I wasn't going to argue with Liz Winstead. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, okay, I'm going to just like, at first I was like, I don't know. I just think, you know, you could just blow certain states off the map and I fucking won't miss them.
I mean, who needs Florida?
Yeah. I mean, when we got to those places, I mean, that's probably fear, you know, talking like, I'm afraid that maybe that is true. And that was not the truth. And like, we got to these places and the people that are providing care and access and doing that work were so like dedicated, and to show up for them and do a show or assemble chairs for their waiting rooms, or whether it was like, you know, the people that are in these communities can't get regular community members to come and support them because they're afraid of retaliation or what people are going to do to them. So to have people come in from out of state or out of their communities and say, we give a shit, we care, we're here, and we would like to help you in whatever way you need us. Even if you don't think you need anything, let us do a show, you know, a little show for you, you know, like, It was really profound for me to see, one, that there were those people existed in those places, two, that they were doing the work, three, they were so beautiful and grateful for what in my mind seemed like the smallest things. And I'm so grateful for those people and role modeling for me what it's like to be on the ground in a community like that. And really, as much as Abortion Access Front are the sort of map makers of how to navigate that world of bullshit, you know? So I was so grateful to, you know, to see that that existed. People don't understand that that is actually happening in these places. They think it's just a complete shit show, and it is a shit show, but they don't understand that there's also people that are resisting and creating those systems. And it was really good for me to witness that.
Yeah, I think It's really nice to like, realize that the shit show isn't the majority. It's just the loud mouths, right? Those are just the legislature.
Yeah.
But looking at what's happening now, where they almost have been running their victory lap around abortion, and now they're like, now we can attack trans people with all that gusto. Would you even consider touring those places with us in 2023?
Hell yeah. Oh, take me. Nice. Take me with. I'll go anywhere.
You heard him say it, people.
I did.
Yes.
Take notes, everyone.
I will go with you anywhere. And, you know, I think that you can absolutely not let these people go unanswered without a response. I think that that's also that, you know, we get something passed and then people think we get to rest. No, these people are like, they're insidious. They're not going to stop. And like, there will be no point, I don't think, in any of our existence or future generations where these people, they are raising children. Antis are raising their children outside abortion clinics, you know, teaching them, you know, so they're indoctrinating, you know, children for generations to come. And some of those kids might escape it and some won't. And so this is not going away anytime soon. So I don't think that, you know, this is something anyone can rest on. You cannot rest on equality marriage. They're coming for that too. So like any, you know, this is also kind of what drives me
a little bit bonkers about my own LGBTQIA community, which is like, there has been this sort of, you know, energy around like LGB people essentially got a lot of rights and they're kind of like, we'll come back for trans people later sort of thing. Well, this is what happens, you know, they peeled us away from the group in such a way. And once they get that, they're coming for you next. It's like why we have to stay together. And it's why we have to create these like very, very important community relationships with the abortion movements and any other communities that are being sought after to remove their rights. So I don't want to shit on my, you know, LGB, you know, my queer brothers and sisters, but we must all stay together on this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm realizing more and more that it's not just us, but there are like queer adjacent families. And I consider that sort of like the abortion movement, the abortion community, abortion rights community as very much a part of that. Like we all have the same goals essentially. And I'll go anywhere with you in 23 or 24, 25, 2070, whatever. It's going to be the same bullshit. I'll go with you wherever, in my diaper and walker and whatever.
Well, Ian, we need you now more than ever. You are spending a ton of time being a trendy man out here on the side, building fences, apparently. And we know this also firsthand because one of your customers, your clientele, Margaret Cho, was on with us. She raved about the catio work you did.
Oh my God, she walked us through it. It's so cool.
Oh my God,
yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm
we
so
we
glad.
Got a tour of it. So could you tell us a little bit about these skills and how do you derive peace from this, from other type of work?
It's kind of the only place where I get peace and it's meditative for me is to get fully in my body and do something completely obsessively, 100%. And maybe I'm listening to an audiobook or a podcast or something, but when I'm working, it's like I get so entranced in what I'm doing. And although it's physical and I'm helping someone else, it is really therapeutic for me. And so a long time ago, about 10 years ago, I lived with a really good friend of mine who's a comic and in recovery. I'm in recovery. And he and I and my girlfriend all lived together and we redid a house together. So he taught me how to do so many different things. And some things I already knew how to do. And then like little things, he's still my phone a friend. When I don't know how to do something, we'll FaceTime and he'll tell me how to do it. And I just do it. This past Saturday, I just did all my brakes and rotors on my truck. You know, like that was my Saturday. Oh, and then I changed like my oil sensor. But he basically is my phone a friend for all that kind of stuff. And he's like 70 years old. And he's like this salty old prick from Boston. And he just knows how to do everything. So fast forward to pandemic, when everything just kind of shut down, I had a bunch of friends who, you know, definitely are in a different, you know, sort of more privileged place financially than I am. And we're like, hey, they basically just all put me to work. And it really put my mind at peace. The financial part of this, the pandemic stuff, like my friends were kind enough to put me to work and to be able to use my hands and be creative. And so I built the first part of Margaret's Catio in the first part of the pandemic. And I started doing more stuff over there and got a little bit of a couple guys of like a small crew to help me with the second part of it. And so I built her a greenhouse and a second section of her catio and like a 100-foot tunnel that goes from one side of her backyard to the other. So that was all on the fly on the design. I couldn't draw it out because, you know, there was trees in the way and like so many things like I had to navigate around that I had to build on the fly based on what my obstacle was.
That is amazing. For some cats that you probably didn't know that well.
No, I knew the cats and loved the cats. So I couldn't wait to build this for them. that rolled into like working for Margaret, but then like my friends, Amy, you guys probably know Amy Landecker from Transparent. She played the older sister on Transparent. She's also on Your Honor. And she's also in the porn show about porn in the Valley, but the feminist writer who wants to like, do you guys know what I'm talking about?
No, what?
Minx.
I don't know
it's
Minx.
It's so good. Mm, oh my God. You have to check it out. It's basically about this feminist writer who like wants to like start a magazine based on a true story. She partners up with this like porn king in the San Fernando Valley in like the 70s. And she ends up putting out like a porn magazine with all feminist writing. And it's just all dicks like throughout the magazine. but her feminist writing in between. And it's called Minx, M-I-N-X. And Amy was in that as well. But anyway, so Amy and her husband, Bradley Whitford, hired me to do a bunch of stuff for them. So I've been running around between my friends who, we were all stressed during the pandemic, but this was also a time when a lot of these people were like, I have all these projects I want to do. So I started running around and tiling bathrooms and, you know, just all kinds of different crazy stuff. So if you take me on the road with you, I'll also build fences. I'll, you know, I can frame walls and closets and I can lay flooring. I can, you know, do sheetrock, mud and tape. You know, there's all kinds. I can build catios at clinics. So, you know.
So people can, maybe you could build secret ways to escape over the antis.
Yeah.
Like a human catio that would take you up and over and down amazing. Into the parking lot. That would be so cool. I know for those of you that don't know, when we go out on the road and help out these clinics, a lot of times, what we do is we do some kind of work at the clinic, you know, and so whether it's landscaping or painting or fence fixing. And so when we went out in we did a little of it, but now that Ian is like chef's kiss on it.
I'll put a crew together and we'll do some. I'll tell you, I built in LA, in East LA for friends of mine, this lesbian couple. Their neighbor was completely like this weird homophobic guy that was totally harassing them. I built a 16-foot wall between their properties.
Oh, damn.
His property was higher than theirs and would look into their backyard and scream at them. And so I built a wall that went above his deck. So he
That's
couldn't
so
see
Game
down
of Thrones.
Into their property.
God. Yeah, goodness.
So it was a 16-foot wall that I built out of cedar fencing. Instead of doing the cedar planks vertically, I did them horizontally. I got 16-foot posts that I put in concrete and then built the fence up higher than his deck so he couldn't look in. Never a problem since.
Imagine being so full of hate that what you want to do from your home is yell into someone else's backyard. Like,
I know, it's so insane.
I cannot. We have been talking and we could probably do this for another 30 minutes, but we do have to end this pod eventually.
Sure.
But we wanted to ask you, because today is Trans Day of Visibility.
Right.
And we want you to tell us what you would like folks to know about how they can advocate for and with you and larger part of the trans community every day.
I would say we need to rail against the false narratives that trans people are inherently dangerous to children. We need to talk about trans people every opportunity we get, if not create the opportunity to share our love of trans people and that we know them. And also, I think that one thing that, you know, I know that you all do this already with your organization, but what people don't know, one of the best ways to help is to get in contact with your local, there are trans organizations in every state, and that to get in touch with them and to see what you can do in your nearest community to help. Because I know that a lot of people think, I know I've heard Liz say this to other people, you know, about they want to just sort of run and do random sort of things. And it's like, yes, but getting in touch with your, like in abortion's case, like a local clinic or in a safe way that isn't scary and like writing them a letter in a closed envelope, you know, and to say that you love them, but to write a postcard or whatever. But there are ways to get in touch with trans organizations to ask them what it is that can actually help. Is there a fund that you can give to? Because we're going to be doing the same sort of thing that you guys have been doing forever, which is figuring out those maps and navigating around the laws to get people the care that they need. So the trans organizations on the ground are already working on those things. And so to start contacting them about how you can do that, can you provide transport? Is there, you know, money that you can, you know, give to the fund that is going to be providing that service? And God damn it, vote. The reason why we're in this pickle is because of the gerrymandering of community voting districts and getting these conservatives into these places of power and them going ahead and making these crazy laws. So vote and like know who you're voting for, rail against the narrative, contact these trans organizations on the ground and ask them what you can do that is really meaningful to them to help. And how can you support families who need affirming care for their kids? You know, it's not just the kids that people are, you know, going after in adolescent health care. You know, they're trying to bring laws to criminalize trans people's existence in public by starting with restroom bans of like, if I were in a restroom, and I know that this isn't primarily geared towards me, but it's trans women that are primarily being targeted with this, but I'm included on that list. If I am in a restroom in Arkansas, this is what they want to pass. You know, if I'm in a restroom with a child or a minor that, which, you know, like, I don't know how I'm supposed, I mean, unless they're little, I don't know how I'm supposed to guess their age, but I'm supposed to exit the restroom because I'm a trans person. And this is just absolutely insane. And they're doing these little, and they're not micro, but I'm going to call them micro. They're like test examples of how much they can peel away from trans rights. If that works, then we're going to go more. We're going to go more. And it's exactly what they did with the abortion, anti-abortion movement. And I just want to say that we need to stop, you know, and really focus on who we are putting in these really community legislative spaces and giving them authority over our lives. It's, I would say again, you know, railing against the false narratives, seeing what you can do directly with trans organizations on the ground in your local communities, and vote and just, ugh. Anyway, thanks for asking me. I'm so,
it's very important.
You know, it's important to, like, because people just don't think, and it's like, you think that people know, and just reminding them that they can find these places in their community is awesome. Ian, we could talk to you all day. We didn't even get a chance to talk to you about comedy, but you'll come back because you're going to be doing a super cool guest spot on a super cool show that we're really excited for that to happen. So I think we want to have you back when that episode of that secret show airs, because I think it's going to be awesome. And I know that it was a dream come true for you on many levels. It was. We'll tease you with that when that drops, and you can come back and tell us the process of it, because it's super awesome. Also, we'll put your amazing Trandy Man Insta handle and all of your socials in our show notes, obviously, but check out Ian's work on Insta. We'll put all of it there. Love you so much, friend.
Awesome. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Bye.
Check out Ian's trendy work on Insta at Official Trandy Man and hire him. Also, hopefully he'll be out on the road with AAF. We'll post all his socials and website in the show notes.
That's our show. Thanks to Jack Knoxville for joining us to celebrate Trans Day of Visibility. You can learn more about Trans Empowerment Project and follow his work through the links in our show notes. Thank you all so much for listening. Support our pod by subscribing. Take a minute to write a review and give us 5 stars. With your help, let's get more people learning about this assault on abortion access. Follow us on all the socials at Abortion Front to keep up on all the latest Repro news.
That's right. And looking where you might fit in to do some abortion activism? Check out our 5-part activist training series, Operation Save Abortion, at operationsaveabortion.com. The series is available in podcast and in video form. And make sure you check out the activist calendar, which is chock full of local and national actions and educational opportunities. And one of those opportunities we're going to ask you for today is to support an incredible human who was fighting the fight in Alabama, Mia Raven, who runs the Powerhouse and was instrumental in AAF's first tour. She has just been diagnosed with cancer and could use your help. So if you want to help an amazing activist, we're going to put the link to her GoFundMe in our show notes.
That's so good. Also, next week, Duke, Virginia, the Georgia organizer for Access Reproductive Care Southeast, joins us. And Ashley Ray, comedian and host of TV I Say on Stitcher, brings the laughs.
Join our Patreon. You'll support great content and get cool FBK merch. All pledges support this pod and all our activism at Abortion Access Front. Pledge at patreon.com/feministbuzzkills. FBK Live is edited by Remy Detournay and is produced by Abortion Access Front.
And finally, we leave you with Idaho Representative Rod Furness, who shows his whole ass by proving he wasn't paying attention in health class on sex ed day or any day.
Boys and girls have 2 P's, peeing and pooping. We know that the proper role of government is to cover the 2 P's. Well, surprise, we just figured out 2023, the girls have 3 P's. They have peeing and pooping and period. Now, we can hold the first 2 P's, peeing and pooping. We can take care of that. But the third P, the girls, don't have a muscle down there. When that happens, it happens.
Feminist Buzzkills, the podcast from Abortion Access Front. New episodes drop Friday. When BS is poppin', we pop off. And if you want to support our podcast and all the work of Abortion Access Front, like, subscribe, and join our Patreon at patreon.com/feministbuzzkills.